Tom, appreciate it very much if you would help support the program, and you can do that on there. There's a place where you can go do it, a one-time or a monthly contribution, and we appreciate either very much. Thanks so much for being with us here on the Guy James Show today, and don't forget, you've heard from the Radical Right.
This is the Quality News Network. The Senate Judiciary Committee will allow subpoenas in the probe involving the recent firing of 8 U.S. attorneys. 5 Justice Department officials will be subpoenaed, as well as 6 of the 8 fired lawyers. In addition to calls by several Democratic senators for Attorney General Alberto Gonzalez's resignation, yesterday the first Republican senator, John Sununu of New Hampshire, said Gonzalez should be replaced because of how he handled the situation. The suspected number 3 al-Qaeda official, Khalid Sheikh Mohammed, allegedly confessed that he planned some 30 terror attacks, including September 11th. He also reportedly confessed to beheading Wall Street Journal reporter Daniel Pearl. Mohammed is being held at the U.S. Naval Prison at Guantanamo Bay, Cuba. The House Appropriations Committee today began debate and voted along party lines to set a timetable for U.S. troops to leave Iraq. The $124 billion spending bill to fund the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan also includes domestic spending, such as rebuilding the Gulf Coast after Hurricane Katrina. The House legislation sets the date for U.S. troops to leave Iraq no later than August 31, 2008. The Senate resolution has the date as March 31, 2008. At the United Nations, the 5 permanent Security Council members, along with Germany, have agreed on a new package of sanctions against Iran for its failure to halt its nuclear program. It will be presented to the rest of the Security Council members with a possible vote next week. The U.S. military said 5 U.S. troops were killed outside of Baghdad yesterday in 2 restive provinces. CNN reports that the U.S. military death toll since the Iraq War began is at least 3,202. Around security checkpoints in Baghdad today, 10 people were killed by suicide car bombers. Dozens were wounded. A new report from the Pentagon describes some of the situation in Iraq as fitting the definition of a civil war. However, the term, quote, does not adequately capture the complexity of the conflict. California Governor Arnold Schwarzenegger has signed the bill that moves the state's primary to February 5th from June. As many as 19 other states are considering moving up their presidential primaries to February so that their residents can have more of a say in the nomination process. You are listening to the Quality News Network, Science and Business Next.
Here's good news about your money. Monterey County Bank has won the Bauer Financial 5-Star Superior Rating for financial strength and stability, making it one of the safest banks in Monterey County for your money. It's nice to know your money is in a safe place, but there are even more reasons to bank with Monterey County Bank. They now have 4 convenient locations in Carmel, Monterey, Carmel Valley, and Pacific Grove. And Monterey County Bank is the oldest locally owned bank, now celebrating its 30th anniversary serving you. Here's another important point. Local businesses have come to trust and rely on Monterey County Bank's position as the county's number one SBA small business lender. Safety, convenience, and local people you can trust. That's Monterey County Bank. Stop in at one of our 4 branches and find out why you can bank on us. Monterey County Bank, SBA preferred lender and equal housing lender, member FDIC.
A Columbia University report finds that binge drinking and pill abuse is becoming more extreme on college campuses. Former Federal Reserve Chairman Alan Greenspan warned today that the increasing number of subprime mortgage defaults could affect other economic sectors. Cisco Systems will pay $3.2 billion in cash for the online meeting company WebEx Communications. Shareholders of CVS Corp., the drugstore chain, voted today to approve the $26.5 billion purchase of Caremark Rx, the pharmacy benefits manager. In February, the Labor Department reported that wholesale-level inflation went up by 1.3%. There was a big increase in energy prices and the cost of food, which saw the largest increase in 3 years. The British company Cadbury Schweppes announced it will split off its American beverage unit. CVS Corp., the drugstore chain, voted today to approve the $26.5 billion purchase of Caremark Rx, the pharmacy benefits manager. And former Federal Reserve Chairman Alan Greenspan warned today that the increasing number of subprime mortgage defaults could affect other economic sectors. Light sweet crude is trading at $57.55 a barrel, and near the close of Wall Street today, the Dow Jones is up 25 points, NASDAQ is up 7. There's always more at our website, qualitynewsnetwork.com. I'm Allie Dramoff.
This is a top to a, you know, what we use on stage, but it's very, very special because if you can see,
yeah,
the numbers all go to 11. Look, right across the board.
Oh.
11,
oh,
11,
and most
11,
of the amps go up to 10.
Exactly.
Does that mean it's louder? Is it any louder?
Well, it's one louder, isn't it? It's not 10. You see, most blokes, you're going to be playing at 10. You're on 10 here, all the way up, all the way up,
yeah,
all the way up. You're on 10 on your guitar. Where can you go from there? Where?
I don't know.
Nowhere, exactly. What we do is if we need that extra push over the cliff, you know what we do?
Put it up to 11.
11, exactly. One louder.
Why don't you just make 10 louder and make 10 be the top number and make that a little louder?
These go to 11.
Welcome to Conversation Radio's Lean, Mean, and Green Show. It's Foxed Up with John Fox, where we turn Conversation Radio into Conservation Radio. Foxed Up is brought to you by B1 Louder Productions of Sydney, Australia, and the Mid-Atlantic Regional Council of Carpenters. They're building the American dream every day. B1 Louder by ringing 877-443-2366. That's 877, the numeral 4, head on. And now, your host, the ranting, head-banging hippie, John Fox!
G'day, everybody. Welcome to Foxed Up here. It's Friday morning down here in Australia. It's probably Thursday afternoon, Thursday evening, wherever you are. And did somebody get the license plate number of whatever just flew over my house? I have no idea what that was, you know, got the news rolling and everything, and then, you know, got the headphones on, and then suddenly there's just kind of this 50-cycle rumble that just kind of went through my whole table and through my microphone stand and my chair, and I don't know if it's aliens, Lorelei, but I don't know, maybe it's the first round of gear heading over to that new base they're building in Western Australia, U.S. Army base. Welcome to the show, everybody. You know what this is. This is Foxed Up on the Head On Radio Network, coming to you live from Sydney, Australia. And, again, producing directly out of the Sydney studios here with Lorelei in West Virginia taking care of the phone calls. So if you want to get in on the show, you dial into 1-877-443-2366, and that gets you into the program. And we've got stuff, and before, you know, I go diving into some more doomsday predictions or some such thing, we have music, and not track of the day stuff. Just unveiled or just announced, oh, in the last few hours, if I follow this correctly, former Vice President Al Gore, now environmental point man, is planning a live Earth concert event. Plans for a global... this is from the Financial Times. Plans for a global day of concerts and events to promote awareness of climate change to more than 2 billion people were unveiled on Thursday by Al Gore, the former U.S. Vice President and leading lights of the environmental industry. As reported by the Financial Times last week, the Save Ourselves campaign will feature events in seven cities on July 7th. Mr. Gore said that the SOS International Distress Signal had been chosen because climate change was the paramount challenge facing humanity. The most important part of SOS is how individuals, corporations, and governments respond, the former U.S. Vice President added. More than 100 up to play in a 24-hour concert known as Live Earth, which will be carried on television, radio, internet. MSN, the Microsoft Internet portal, will broadcast the concert on the web in the U.S. The television network and the radio group Sirius and XM will take part, and in the U.K., the BBC will be the broadcast partner. Shanghai, Sydney, Johannesburg, and London were confirmed as four concert-hosting cities. Other locations in Brazil, Japan, are determined. It is estimated that more than 1 million could attend the live events. Artist lists are people like, so far confirmed, are people like writers. Keane, Snow Patrol, Snoop Dogg, Bon Jovi, Duran Duran, and Kelly Clarkson. Oh, please. That's American Idol. That's a whole other tirade. Kevin Wall, one of the leading organizers of the Live 8 concerts to campaign against third world poverty, founded SOS and will produce the event through his company Control Room. Concert proceeds will fund further campaigning by the Alliance for Climate Protection, a movement chaired by Mr. Gore. The organizers also plan to use only electricity from renewable sources, employ recycling and biodegradable materials where possible, and offset travel via carbon credits. And I heard something on the television with this. They had cross of some really, really bad speech impedimented American reporter for Channel 7 over here, and I mean bad American accent. It's just really bad. I was talking about that there may be a stage in Antarctica. That sounds a little far-fetched to me. But I don't know. We'll see what we find out. Who knows? But hey, there you go. And you know, Al Gore is he beat a man. You know, An Inconvenient Truth, which I have yet to see. It'll pop up on DVD and I'll end up buying it here. But it seems to have really made a huge difference and opened up a whole bunch, you know, a whole lot of eyes to what the hell's going on with this planet. And the fact that, you know, we are in a very, very serious situation. You know, so good stuff. I'll be curious to see what they're doing to counteract the damage done by the concert itself. And this is a new thing when it comes to event production that I think just has to be there. And I would think, hope, and believe that we'll see new avenues for making concert production more environmentally friendly, which would be a good thing, because it is a somewhat wasteful industry, and I can say that because I used to work in it. Now let's see, what do I have time for before we go out? It's kind of an interesting little bit of stuff. Over at ecogeek.org, really, really good website that deals with green technology, for the most, basically, that there's an outfit that has put out an interesting kind of unique type of wind turbine. And it looks kind of like an aluminum Art Deco version of a Dairy Queen ice cream cone top. and it says the short and stubby turbine puts out 1,100 kilowatts a month. Here's a small 4 foot tall and 4 foot diameter vertical axis wind turbine designed for residential installation. According to the manufacturer, the MagWind MW1100 can generate 1,100 kilowatts per month in a 13-mile-per-hour average wind. The short stance of the MagWind turbine seems to provide an added benefit of enabling it to keep generating in extremely high winds. and can withstand a top wind speed of over 100 miles per hour, where most other turbines have safeties to stop them if wind speeds get too high, some even as low as 40 miles per hour or less. And it's designed to capitalize on the effect of a sloped roof increasing the wind's pressure to boost its efficiency, though how well this works probably depends on the orientation of the roof and the direction of the prevailing winds. Company claims a faster payback than solar or a typical horizontal axis wind turbine, and a cost of only 3.5 cents per kilowatt hour. Interesting. Their website, there's links on the EcoGeek page, page to the company's site. There's not a whole lot of information yet, but it's kind of interesting, you know. So a big silver Dairy Queen cone top on your house, and you can pull 1,100 kilowatt hours a month. That's not too shabby, eh? So we got to go out to a break, and John's got to pick out some bumper music, which is always just a really, really scary prospect when John has control over things. You're listening to Foxed Up here on the Head On Radio Network, and we will be back very, very shortly. And let's do this, because this is just some nasty guitar. And we'll see you on the other side of this break.
Is the Quality News Network. President Bush today urged the NATO countries to send more troops to Afghanistan.
Hey, Peter, welcome to the program.
You absolutely know that you cannot mention Robert Sunday without conjuring me. This is the known fact.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Right. Well, sometimes I do it on purpose.
You know, the thing that kills me, you know, God just continues to punk Robertson. after time, and it goes back for years, you know. Let's just talk a minute about his business venture. From 91 to 94, he was involved in something called Calo Vita, and it was a multi-level marketing company that breached that pyramid scheme.
Yeah, like Amway.
Sold beauty products and healthcare products. Oh, they had a product called Sea of Galilee Mud Mask.
No, they did not.
Oh, yes, thank you.
You no.
Bob, as a heart attack, I'm serious.
Sea of Galilee Mud Mask?
Oh, yes, it was part of the product line.
Prayer meeting edition of Head On with Bob Kincaid, Wednesday nights, 6 to 9 p.m. here on the Head On Radio Network.
Energy Hog the team. I want you to infiltrate the house and waste some energy.
We'll just sneak into these leaky windows.
Just like we thought, boss. No insulation in the attic.
Perfect. Now go wild and waste some wattage.
The Mitchell House. A house like many others, except this one's under attack by Energy Hogs. They show up anywhere energy's being wasted.
Talk to me, Hogs.
Washer, it's not Energy Star rated.
Outstanding. What about the thermostat?
Not programmable. I repeat, not programmable.
Looks like we're living high on the hog.
Only one person has the power to get rid of Energy Hogs. You.
Hold on! Someone's home!
Andy's got energy-efficient light bulbs!
To find out how you can fight energy hogs, log on to energyhog.org. You'll find fun games and lots of tips on making your home more energy efficient.
Now he's installing Energy Star appliances.
Not Energy Star! That's it! Get out of there! I'll get you, energyhog.org!
Hey! Wait for me!
Brought to you by the Alliance to Save Energy, the Department of Energy, and the Ad Council.
Well, 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 bugger me. What are you going to do? My hard drive just decided to disconnect with all my music on it. So we'll fix that up during this segment. So welcome back to Foxed Up here, everybody. Boy, did I feel like I just got caught with my pants down. Oh, well. Now, Gene, our news ninja. Hi! Sent this the other day, and it took me a little while to get to it. And this is an interesting bit from groovygreen.com about oil problems in Iran. Go figure. But this makes a lot of sense. Iran has the second largest oil reserves in the world, but according to this article, which we're going to go to, they are starting to have a few problems with their production. Times piece, where it says that the West on Iran's lifeline. It says Western political and economic program has chilled foreign investment to the extent that it's now squeezing the that is sanctions and wary of unrest at home. The world's fourth largest oil exporter, Iran, sits on the second largest oil and gas reserves, but it has struggled in recent years to keep its oil production currently running at about 4 million barrels a day from falling. Some analysts say that if this acute imbalance between stagnant production and rising demand at home continues unchecked, Iran will have no oil left over to export within in a decade. Its oil exports totaling $47 billion a year account for half the government's revenue. They have a perfect storm of problems feeding into each other, said Robert Murphy, an analyst at PFC Energy, a consulting firm in Washington. He estimated that Iran might have no more oil to export by around 2015 if it did not rein in runaway consumption and reverse the long-term decline in its oil production. The domestic energy situation is as big as the international issue. It feeds into it in every significant way, he added. To curb demand, which has been driven partly by subsidies that keep the domestic pump price at a mere 35 cents a gallon, the government plans to bring rationing gasoline in March, a measure so unpopular and potentially explosive that rationing plans have been put off several times in the past. So, you know, and it says, and here they say, Iran's energy problem is in many ways at the heart of its nuclear controversy as well. Iran's leadership says it wants to develop nuclear power generation to free its petroleum resources for domestic use or for exports. The United States and other Western countries say Iran is using the program as a front for building weapons. At a time of relatively high prices, oil is clearly providing Iran's government with enormous strength, but also with an Achilles heel. In December, the United Nations Security Council voted unanimously to impose limited economic sanctions on Iran until it halts its nuclear program. So far, American and European officials say that they are not seeking to cut off Iran's oil exports because that would disrupt global markets and raise prices for Western consumers. See, always, it's always the Western consumers that, you know, have to be thought of first. And why is that? Exactly. You know, that old line, how did them Arabs get on top of our oil? Ugh. Arg, arg, arg. But this is an interesting thing, because they show there's a bit of a graph showing, you know, the estimated consumption over the next few years. I mean, you know, we're talking 10 years. And the decline in their production will meet. And in fact, even if their production was maintained, they would be consuming as much as they can produce probably by 2030 anyway. So, very, very interesting. Very, very interesting. So I think we're going to move on to our track of the day, and hopefully that'll all play all right. That's on the other drive, and things should be awakened anyway. So I'm just going to double-check this. And this was sent to us by our good friend Billy Shears, who has suggested a song or two in the past. And this guy, Billy, does a nice job. I like when you send me stuff like this, man, because it's stuff that I wouldn't think about. And this is a band called Quicksilver Messenger Service. And they were one of San Francisco's original psychedelic bands in the late 1960s, essentially a jam band. This is from the Wiki. Their early albums and live shows contributed to some of the best instrumental jams of the period. They were popular around the Bay Area, but did not reach the national popularity achieved by their San Francisco contemporaries, Jefferson Airplane, the Grateful Dead, and others. And I believe, actually, one of the guys in the band ended up playing for Jefferson Airplane at some point. So, what we have here, is, and just a really, another great, just kind of environmental hippie lyric. It's a great track. It's a song called "What About Me," and just really, really great song. I don't know if I was familiar with this or not when I received this. So, Billy Shears, thank you very, very much for this. And without further ado, Quicksilver Messenger Service. I believe I got this all right. What About Me?
Obviously need to address the issue of the Saddam Hussein execution. Have seen the video that was taken on a cell phone, or have read about the circumstances surrounding the execution. It's pretty evident that the absolutely worst thing that could have happened with the carrying out of the sentence after the long trial of Saddam Hussein happened. If we had sat down and made a list and said, all right, here's a list of six or seven different things that could happen. What would be the very, very worst thing that could happen, not only for us, for the United States, but for the world and for the Iraqis themselves? And it seems to me that if not first, then definitely second would have been what indeed did happen.
The Dr. Bill O'Brien Show, Tuesday to Thursday, noon to 2 Eastern, here on the Head On Radio Network.
Global warming is here. The effects may seem slight now,
but in a few decades, they could be massive.
Heat waves, floods, and food shortages. What can we do?
We can join together.
Because when many, unite as one.
We can achieve anything.
Powerful. Find out how we can still reduce greenhouse gas pollution. Warming.com. Brought to you by Environmental Defense, the Robertson Foundation, and the Ad Council.
Our children will always outgrow us. But for the first time in generations, they may not outlive us. The last 25 years, the percent of overweight children has doubled. A problem that could be greatly reduced just by having a place to exercise. Right now, people are working hard to put parks and playgrounds where children will use them. Log on to earthshare.org today and find out how you can help. Brought to you by EarthShare and the Ad Council.
Everybody, welcome back to Foxed Up here on the Head On Radio Network, and we got the tunes happening again. It's all good, it's all groovy, and that's some more of that wonderful Perfect Circle album, Emotive. What a great cover of Freedom of Choice. Just killer, killer song. Anyway, welcome back to the show, everybody. Before we get out of here for the day, I think this is probably a crucial one to cover. Celsius, CELSIAS.com, at their blog, and this is a fantastic blog, this one. China to limit emissions. They say, pay attention, America. Pay attention, Australia. The Chinese government is preparing to adopt its first program to cut its greenhouse gas emissions, which contribute to global warming. Although some reports suggest the plan will not include quantitative reduction targets, a senior official said on Tuesday that the country would seek to reduce carbon dioxide emissions by 10% over the next 5 years. The government's climate plan, expected to seek final state approval by the end of February, will set out its intentions to reduce greenhouse gas emissions and develop green technologies. Lu Zidu, deputy director of the Office of Global Environment Affairs at the Chinese Ministry of Science, told ScienceDevice.net that setting quantitative emission reduction targets was hard and unrealistic. That's via The New Scientist. But Celsius continues with, both the U.S. and Australia have to date refused to get involved in capping greenhouse gases, citing the exemptions granted countries like China and India as their reason. It is known that the warming we are experiencing today is due to the greenhouse gases emitted by industrial nations like the U.S. in the past, and although the CO2 output of China and India is growing rapidly today, the per capita output of each nation still has a long way to go to catch up with the U.S. Until now, these facts are downplayed by the Bush and Howard administrations, but if China voluntarily comes out with a strong commitment to cut back, it will be all the harder to continue with these excuses. China's phenomenal growth has the world, including China, very concerned. We shall await their announcement with bated breath, as will I. And just last night, Malcolm Turnbull, the government's so-called environment minister, was on, and he just kept going back to the, but China and India, we won't sign Kyoto. But, however, we're going to constantly talk about that we're going to meet our Kyoto goals. Never mentioning ever the fact that Australia got special compensation in the first round due to the coal industry here and many, many, many
other things. You know, and it's this per capita thing. You know, Australia is the worst greenhouse gas emitter per capita in the world. Australia's largest landfill, or at least the one in Sydney, has a better view of the city than the top of the Harbour Bridge. It gets higher than the top of the Harbour Bridge. It's 50 meters high, eh? And it's enormous. It's just enormous. where else are we going? Oh, this one really... Oh, speaking of Australian landfills, the UK is looking to enact or utilize some Australian scheme for landfills. And it says the Lancashire town of Leyland is hardly a monument to cutting-edge technology. It is best remembered for the car plant that became a symbol to the industrial turmoil that plagued Britain in the late 1970s. Perhaps that's why the locals were none too impressed to hear a few months back that their locality had been earmarked for the plant where all Lancashire's domestic waste would soon be processed. The county produces 775,000 tons of the stuff a year, so it certainly sounded as if Leyland was being dumped on from a great height in return for a few badly needed jobs. But when Greenpeace celebrates the kind of technology that is to be used in the county's used on the county's rubbish in a report on cool waste, and Friends of the Earth positively purrs about the prospect of the plant, which despite the protests has just been approved by Lancashire County Council, and something must be afoot. The environmentalists are interested because the Lancashire plant's operator is Global Renewables Limited, a firm that the firm is a subsidiary of an old Australian mining company that decided several years ago to investigate whether the techniques it was using to extract diamonds, gold and tin from the earth could be applied to remove recyclable commodities from mountains of waste that were dotted across the vast nation. When it comes to rubbish, the Australians are in a field of their own. Only the U.S. throws out more household waste than Australia. The colossal garbage tip south of Sydney, which is 50 meters high, provides a more spectacular view than even the Sydney Harbour Bridge. The Australians found that where there was muck, there was indeed brass. Working on the age-old mining principle that the more reusable materials it could separate out, the more profit it could make. It built the Southern Hemisphere's largest waste facility, Eastern Creek, where it recycles virtually all the waste it receives, and here the groundbreaking bit incinerates none of it. It is considered by many environmentalists to be the first firm to view waste as a mineable resource rather than something to be destroyed. This is the kind of technology that counties and cities the length and breadth of Britain desperately need. All recent talk on recycling has been focused on stepping up our curbside recycling efforts. We recycle our compost 23% of our waste compared to 53% in Germany and 70% in Flanders, Belgium. But what about the 77% of material that we cannot recycle ourselves? So much of it still goes to Britain's 1,986 methane-emitting landfill sites, which are filling up fast, that Britain looks unlikely to meet limits set by the EU that would hit us in 2010. To bring the country into line, the government has announced that councils are to be fined £150 per ton if they exceed prearranged targets from 2010, and that along with the other private finance initiative, cash to build facilities to replace landfill has started a mad scramble among the councils. This sounds really, really, really good. And again, you know, to be able to make use of the waste that we've already created, sounds like a good plan to me. And the Eastern Creek landfill, the other big landmark out there is the Eastern Creek Raceway. You ever notice that they always stick these little family mini NASCAR things in near old factory sites? Never mind. I'm not going to go down that road. This is good stuff. This is good stuff. And I have a feeling that this is, if I'm not mistaken, don't quote me on this, if I'm not mistaken, it's this outfit that was running into the issue that they were also produced, I believe, also turning methane over into electricity production. And if they exceeded a certain amount of electricity produced, they'd have to pay the coal industry a stipend for taking their business. Again, follow the money. And the coal mafia is deep and dirty in Australian politics, for sure. I think that this is all very, very cool stuff. They're not pleasant subjects, you know, landfills, stinky, nasty stuff. But that's the whole point. You know, I still remember when living in Germany, the recycling programs are quite intense there. And because there's so much packed in Tetra Pak, which is 100% recyclable, over there, and they have the recycling processes to do it, and just the way that they still use deposit bottles in wide use and things like that, I used to always be amazed that, you know, at the end of the week when we'd go and bring the rubbish out, you know, there was this one big bag of recyclables. It was huge. And this tiny, you know, quarter, third of a kitchen rubbish bin full of actual landfill waste every week. And, again, it was a coordinated effort. I think deposit bottles are a huge thing. And also, Australia sells stuff in Tetra Pak here, but they don't recycle it. So it's a complete waste. And Tetra Pak is one of those things that's 100% reclaimable. They can separate all the three layers, I believe that it is, out, return it back into raw material, and just produce more. And these are technologies that we really, really need to grab a hold of. And utilize as much as we can. Where, you know, packaging is a huge thing, and you know, we've spoken about a few stores in the UK where they've been looking to put pressure on the grocery stores and whatnot, the big chains, that the public was not happy with the amount of waste product that you were forced to take. Out of the grocery store. And this is another thing that I dug in Germany, you know, shopping at the local Aldi. You just, after you paid out at the checkout, you'd remove all the excess cardboard packaging and whatnot that you didn't actually need to carry the product home. And it would go right into recycling bins right there at the grocery store, which would mean it would get compacted right on site. They'd send, and the stores would do it themselves. And that meant that there was less demand on the curbside. And it was just something that everybody did. And it was a very, very smart thing. And you know, this is like 10 years ago. I can only imagine, you know, how much better. You know, and not only that, with the deposit bottle thing. As far as I'm concerned, it helped bring the cost of things down. But I have nothing to back that up on. It just seems to me that it would, and it did. And, you know, it's all a good thing. Sorry, I'm just having to get my head around thinking about bumper music for the next go out. So, which we're going to go out and take that break here in a moment. When we come back, we got a couple more things, some more stuff to do, just to get to. Don't forget, I still wait for EcoBuzz, the MySpace for greens. So if you go over to ecobuzz.net and have a look, you can set up a blog and get involved in a green community that's all kind of very brand new and just getting off the ground, and check things out there. And if you want an invite, just drop me an email, John, J-O-N, at headonradionetwork.com, and I'd love to send you one. So we're going to go out, take our final break for the day. And when we come back, we're going to wrap things up here on Foxed Up for another afternoon. We'll see you after all this.
Listen down, you little man. I'm not the one who's trying to change. here comes to understand it'll be okay, yeah. You need to change it, you need to change it now. I'm not the one who's trying to be, I'm not the one who's trying to be your enemy. That's something you need to change. I'm not the one who's trying to be your enemy. That's something you need to change.
As I understand the conflict right now between the president's bill and the one supported by the Democrats, John McCain and Lindsey Graham, is that John McCain and Lindsey Graham and the Democrats say that the bill, the standards we use, should be the standards that are the same as the treaty we signed, the Geneva Convention signed after World War II that every civilized nation follows. And the president is saying, that restricts me too much. That's too humane. I want to be able to do other things. I won't say what they are, but sources tell us that things like waterboarding, you know, drowning people, putting them in 50-degree weather. And the question, I think, is should we hold the United States to the same standards that England holds itself to, that Canada holds itself to, that other civilized nations hold themselves to?
Get the view from inside the Beltway with Mark Levine on the Radio Inside Scoop, right here, 2 to 3 p.m. weekdays on the Head On Radio Network.
This is Joe Perry
and Steven Tyler of Aerosmith for Red. You know, it's okay to rock and roll and party down. Just don't get in that 2,000-pound bullet when you're done and cocked. And please don't drink and drive.
I'm the one that jaded you.
A reminder that friends don't let friends drive drunk. A public service message brought to you by the Ad Council, U.S. Department of Transportation, National Association of Broadcasters, and RAD.
Hi, I'm NHRA driver John Forrest. In race car driving, seconds can win a race. But to win the race for a better environment, we need to understand the importance of recycling our used motor oil and filters. Do your part. Visit earth911.org or call 1-800-CLEANUP to find your nearest recycling location. And help make every day Earth Day.
For more information, call 1-800-CLEANUP or visit earth911.org.
All right, everybody, welcome back to Foxed Up here on the Head On Radio Network, and we're just about to wrap things up for the day. A little bit of Faith No More there. Oh, love this band. Great band. Boy, can I prattle on about music, can I? What to do? This was kind of interesting. Via our good friends at treehugger.com, report that the Global Language Monitor reports that based on its 2006 survey, sustainable is the top word, stay the course is the top catchphrase, and Darfur the top name. They say here, the GLM seems to walk the line between statistical study and mocking humor. It defines sustainable as, quote, originally a green term that has moved into the mainstream, meaning self-generating, as in wind power is a sustainable power supply, can apply to populations, marriages, agricultures, economies, and the like. The opposite of disposable, seemingly a confabulation of renewable and sustainable and recyclable. This lighthearted definition might be due to a backwards day sort of reporting style. GLM, in another example of its approach, defines climate change as the warming of the Earth's atmosphere due to natural cycles, and then in brackets say politically sensitive, believed to be primarily outside the control of man. The offsided definition of sustainable does helpfully point out that out the not-so-obvious paradox of its buzz status. Describe something as sustainable, and your average listener has no idea what you're getting at. He/she might conclude that that the term is the way a stock analyst would saying we need to be more sustainable indicates nuttiness or pretentiousness to anyone not immersed in the topics of global resource depletion and climate change. But if you say you keep blasting at those turkeys a mile away, you're going to run out of shells. The unsustainability of the behavior is immediately apparent. Although neither the speaker nor the listener in the hypothetical turkey shoot would likely use sustain to talk about it. So we ask you then, just whose global buzz is it? But, you know, these kind of things about, you know, what was big in language this year. And, you know, I mean, the environment is finally taking to the forefront in most nations. And I'm hearing reports that it's starting to come to the forefront in the United States, which is a wonderful thing. Now, here's one to confuse you with. Now, we all know that Tony Blair is winding up his reign in the UK. He's not a very popular guy these days. But here there's a piece from The Independent. And the headline just kind of got me. It says, Blair bypasses Bush to build a consensus on climate change. This is from Colin Brown, deputy political editor for The Independent. Tony Blair is to devote himself to fighting global warming when he quits power this summer by promoting an American rethink on the Kyoto Protocol. Now, last I heard, there were hot rumors that he was going to go work for Murdoch. And if it wasn't that, I thought he'd have a Carlisle gig. But I may be proved very, very wrong here. He says he discussed his plans for a post-Bush consensus with Angela Merkel, the German chancellor, who has made climate change a priority for her presidency of the G8 and the EU. Mr. Blair is using GLOBE, an international forum for parliamentarians to discuss global warming, to persuade the big three polluters, America, China, and India, to join global action to tackle climate change. The Secretary of State for Environment, David Miliband, a Blair ally, will use a speech by video link to a Globe conference in Washington today to call for a dramatic shift by the United States in favor of a successor to the Kyoto Agreement on climate change. The forum is one of the few places where U.S. senators can discuss climate change with Indian and Chinese politicians in spite of the reluctance of the White House to engage in discussions of the Kyoto targets. Mr. Blair's aim is to prepare the ground for a new U.S. president to take over in January 2009. He believes the German presidency of the EU and G8 could prove decisive in driving forward the agenda. It's one of the reasons he wanted to stay on till June. He thinks he can be a decisive influence at the G8, said an ally. He sees it as a legacy issue. Tony Blair has a huge amount of credibility over here on the issue of climate change. There is an opportunity for him only once he formally steps down to utilize his contacts and credibility on the international stage to engage Democrats and Republicans in a consensus on climate change. President Bush refused to sign up to Kyoto targets, but Mr. Miliband will call for U.S. states, including California, to sidestep the White House by linking up the EU emissions trading scheme after the Kyoto Agreement runs out in 2012. Mr. Miliband will write to 9 U.S. states to ask them to build on the agreement last year reached by Mr. Blair with Arnold Schwarzenegger, the governor of California, on a trading scheme. And I gotta give credit where credit's due. Arnie has turned himself, he's remade himself, and he's doing some amazing things in California when it comes to the environment and turning California into a leader on cleaning up our act like they once were. But very interesting that Tony Blair is planning for the end of his career to go out on the climate change thing, and it sounds like he's written George Bush off as just completely hopeless in this and getting ready for the next president, whoever that might be. So I find that very, very cool. But I have to admit I'm a bit surprised. And there's been word that in the discussions going on at the moment that the Germans and the UK are at loggerheads over emissions quotas, and I believe the Germans are saying that the English aren't going. Aren't going far enough. So, you know, and good on the German chancellor. You know, I when I lived in Germany, I really got the impression that this was a nation that understood the limited amount of land that they had left, so they had to control.
This is the Quality News Network. President Bush today urged the NATO countries to send more troops to Afghanistan. In a speech, he warned that the Taliban would increase their offensive and launch new attacks in the spring. The Taliban resurgence last year made 2006 the most violent year since the U.S. invasion in 2001. In preparation for the anticipated offensive, President Bush extended the stay of 3,200 U.S. troops currently serving in Afghanistan. The increase will raise the U.S. troop level there to 27,000, the highest U.S. troop presence since the war began. In Baghdad today, the joint U.S.-Iraqi security crackdown continues. Forces have seized weapons and ammunition. Troops also went through a neighborhood where Sunni militants have a stronghold. In southern Iraq, the border with Iran was sealed off by British troops to prevent smuggling of weapons. The border between Iraq and Syria was also closed down today as part of the 72-hour security clampdown. In Iraq, at least 7 people were killed in several car bomb explosions today. Senate Majority Leader Harry Reid will call for a procedural vote Saturday on the non-binding resolution to oppose President Bush's 21,000 troop surge in Iraq. The House is expected to vote on the measure tomorrow. Federal auditors say the U.S. reconstruction effort and war in Iraq has wasted $10 billion taxpayer dollars. The 3 top auditors appeared before a House committee with numerous examples of misspending, poor accounting, delays, and other abuse. Some conservatives are criticizing the White House for the recently announced North Korean nuclear disarmament deal. Specifically, they are concerned about the provision which allows the communist country to be removed from a list of states that sponsor terror. In Gaza City, a new Palestinian unity government between Hamas and Fatah will be formed in 5 weeks. That's part of the agreement reached last week in Saudi Arabia. The FBI is investigating newly elected Nevada Governor Republican Jim Gibbons for his role in awarding secret military... This is the Quality News Network. The House Appropriations Committee today began debate and voted on party lines for the $124 billion emergency spending bill to fund the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan. The bill also calls for a timetable for U.S. troops to leave Iraq.
Pre-recorded show ended a bit early, and we will be playing music for your enjoyment until the top of the hour. Stay with us. Next up, Head On with Bob Kincaid.
Maybe I'll win.
This is the Quality News Network. The House Appropriations Committee today began debate and voted on party lines for the $124 billion emergency spending bill to fund the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan. The bill also calls for a timetable for U.S. troops to leave Iraq. It now goes to the full House of Representatives. The House legislation sets the date for U.S. troops to start to leave Iraq by March 1, 2008, but no later than August 31st of that year. However, the Senate measure, which has the troop pullout date by March 31st, has not received enough votes to go forward. The Democrats needed 60 votes to approve the phased withdrawal resolution. The suspected number three Al-Qaeda official, Khalid Sheikh Mohammed, allegedly confessed that he planned some 30 terror attacks, including September 11th. He also reportedly confessed to beheading Wall Street Journal reporter Daniel Pearl. Mohammed is being held at the U.S. Naval Prison at Guantanamo Bay, Cuba. One of Iraq's two vice presidents met with President Bush today at the White House. The Iraqi leader had recently been the target of an assassination attempt. A new report from the Pentagon describes some of the situation in Iraq as fitting the definition of a civil war. However, the term, quote, does not adequately capture the complexity of the conflict. Around security checkpoints in Baghdad today, 10 people were killed by suicide car bombers. Dozens were wounded. The U.S. military said in eastern Baghdad, 4 U.S. soldiers were killed today by 2 roadside bombs. 2 other soldiers were wounded. The Senate Judiciary Committee will allow subpoenas in the probe involving the recent firing of 8 U.S. attorneys. 5 Justice Department officials will be subpoenaed, as well as 6 of the 8 fired U.S. lawyers. As the rival factions Hamas and Fatah formed a new unity government, Israel responded today that it would not deal with the new government. At the United Nations, the 5 permanent Security Council members, along with Germany, have agreed on a new package of sanctions against Iran for its failure to halt its nuclear program. It will be presented to the rest